Welcome to Mormon Land, the Salt Lake Tribune's podcast about LDS practices and preachings. I'm Dave Noyce. I'm the religion editor and a managing editor at the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm joined again by our senior religion writer, Peggy Fletcher Stack. Hello, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
Great. Hey, last fall, the world celebrated the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation with Martin Luther's famed 95 Theses. Mormon blogger Liz Johnson decided to write for Exponent 2 her own list, calling for 95 changes in the LDS Church. She's with us today from Michigan to talk about that list. Liz, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great, thank you so much. Well, first off, what prompted you to tally this list?
It actually began as a joke with my sister on the morning of Reformation Day. I had been listening to podcasts about Martin Luther and kind of reading about it, and I kind of jokingly wondered aloud with her if I could come up with 95 theses for my life, and she dared me to do it. And the first few just happened to be about Mormonism, so I stayed with the theme to see if I could come up with 95, and about 2 hours later, it turned out to not be that hard.
Wow. You maybe had to call the list down. Who knows, right? So,
yeah.
Well, number one on your list, I'm going to go right to the number one on the list because it seems to be at the top of every Mormon's wish list, which is less church. Specifically, you call for a two-hour Sunday meeting block instead of three. Why is that?
Because I have trouble sitting still for 3 hours, and my four children have trouble sitting still for 3 hours, and it's just a long time to sit and worship. I feel like that last hour I'm really running on fumes, and I also think it would be a more efficient use of our buildings and our time. I feel like, especially along the Wasatch Front, you could fit several more wards in the buildings and your building costs go down and you're just, it's a more efficient use of our time, I think. I think we would probably all get a little bit more out of it, especially in this day and age when we're all used to quick news, quick meetings, quick life.
How would you like the meetings, would you like to drop a certain meeting? Like, there's always talk about dropping Sunday school, or do you think everything should just be shortened and still have all three meetings?
I mean, I'm open to pretty much anything. I had heard about it happening where you have still the hour sacrament meeting, and then either alternating a Sunday school and Priesthood Relief Society hour, or maybe dropping each of those down to about 35 minutes. Whatever works, honestly, I'm just fine as long as I don't have to sit there for three full hours. It's especially hard with little kids. I feel like a lot of my list came out of my bringing up four kids in the church. It's just there's a lot. It's especially hard for young mothers who have children who need to nap and children who want to eat, and it's just cumbersome.
And you also, one item on the list was no meetings after 2 o'clock. How do you squeeze four meetings in a meeting house with nothing after 2 o'clock?
Yeah, that would definitely have to be negotiated if we were fitting four in there. But I think I would be more apt to want, I would be fine meeting 2 to 4 because you're able to kind of get in. You still can have dinner when you get home. You're able to get in, you know, naps and lunch beforehand. Right now my ward meets at 11:30, and while I appreciate the extra sleep in the morning, it's a little bit awkward to make work for our family.
So which items on your list stood out to you, particularly for you, and which ones were the most controversial?
The ones that I really liked were specifically about integrating girls and women into our ordinances and worship. Numbers 22 and 23 about having the girls help pass the sacrament, like the beehives or the young women, and also bringing the sacrament to the mother's lounge. There's nothing scripturally that prohibits girls from passing the sacrament, to my knowledge. It's not necessarily a priesthood function. We already pass it down the pews to one another. And a lot of women who are in the mother's lounges nursing babies miss the sacrament altogether. And if we're going to be serious about that being the most important part of our worship, I think we should prioritize it and prioritize it for everyone. And I just really think girls need, they need something. We need to have rites of passage and rituals that connect them to the church. And they need to be meaningful acts of service that I think are rooted in Christ. And I think that would be one way to meaningfully integrate the girls into our service to show that they are needed, that they are seen, and that they are valued. And that wouldn't, I mean, obviously, I did have on number 30, ordain women, which is always a controversial one. And that would kind of all encompass this. But this is something you can do without necessarily ordaining women.
So along that line, you also suggested, of course, more women speakers at LDS General Conference, and one of your items actually has already come to pass, which is to integrate the women's session of General Conference, which has been previously a week before, and now it's going to be just part of conference. What do you think? You already got one down, 94 to go.
One down, 94 to go. Yeah, well, and I think that's wonderful, and I think this list will actually be a nice kind of point in time to have. One of the reasons I'm glad that I wrote it is so that I can look back at it in a year or in 5 years and kind of see what things have changed, what things haven't, what things would need to be adjusted. But yeah, I definitely would love more women speakers. Just more, if we're going to take seriously the idea of having heavenly parents and a heavenly mother, then we need to take seriously the idea of having women as spiritual leaders and women who can speak authoritatively on theological issues. And so I think that's all part of it.
Also, on along that line of sacrament, this taking the sacrament being so important, I liked your item where you said, you know, don't lock the doors or refuse to give sacrament to people who come late. I actually do know of Mormon wards where that is the case.
Yeah, that came up because my sister-in-law, actually, that's the policy in her ward and stake on the Wasatch Front. And I just think, and she said, I mean, she actually had said to me that she has arrived late several times, and she notices the people who are arriving late are the people who have, you know, family members in wheelchairs, people who are already struggling to get to church, people who, for whatever reason, would prefer to sit in the lobby instead of being in the chapel with the rest of the ward. And it was just really sad to her that people who are already somewhat on the margins were being further excluded by that policy. I don't see Christ in that policy.
So that's a kind of a local decision that local leaders make? There's no guidance from the top on that?
I've heard conflicting reports. Some people say it's just ward to ward or stake to stake, and other people have said they've received guidance from, you know, area authorities or even higher than that. So it's hard to know.
You also list some kind of interesting items, kind of hygiene items, let's call them. You talk about the nursery where, I guess, little ones are tended during block services, and that the toys should be cleaned more often. You also talk about, I guess, some Mormon wards, their toys are sort of like an island of misfit toys, all kinds of broken items, and you say we should get some new items in there for those toddlers. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So my ward actually had hand, foot, and mouth disease run through the entire nursery last year.
Oh, my
year,
gosh.
I know that's not an unusual occurrence, and it's just a matter of, I mean, toddlers are just, you know, they have bodily fluids kind of all over them all the time, and that's just a matter of fact. But I think, I tend to think that, in my experience, primary and nursery tend to get a lower priority than some of the other auxiliaries in the church. And that comes through in the budget, and it comes through in the attention that's given to those kinds of things. So if we could just bleach the toys every so often and, you know, make sure that the kids have things that, I mean, I'm not arguing that it needs to be a full Montessori in there, but I do think that it would be nice if we had, you know, cars that had wheels and dolls with all their limbs and, you know, just some attention given to them rather than it being kind of whatever people were going to give to the DI or Goodwill and instead are giving them to the nursery because they aren't necessarily functioning anymore.
What about, you had some suggestions about music that I thought were pretty powerful, suggesting taking out Star Spangled Banner. And also, speaking of the primary, suggesting losing that ever popular Follow the Prophet song. Why get rid of that one?
The Follow the Prophet song, I think, I mean, this might be a little bit controversial. I know not everybody agrees with it, but I think it's a little bit of idolatry. I think, well, one, the minor key makes it sound creepy. I realized this when my kids were actually marching around a building at my husband's graduate school singing that song, and I realized anybody who passed by would think we were part of some sort of cult, because that's just kind of how it sounded, was this kind of creepy minor key cult anthem. But also because we're supposed to be focusing our attention towards Christ, and our leaders should turn us towards Christ, but I think that some of our songs lean towards worshiping of our leaders or lead towards worshiping of our country here in the United States, and we're a global church. And I get uncomfortable when we sing the Star Spangled Banner in church. I grew up outside of the country. I actually grew up junior high and high school in Mexico City. And so to come back to the United States and hear those songs, it was very uncomfortable to me. And I know it's uncomfortable to, I mean, I've traveled, I've done some work both in Central America, but also in Sub-Saharan Africa. And having those songs in those hymn books, because a lot of them have English-speaking hymn books, is really uncomfortable to them. And they're wondering, how much are we worshiping Christ? How much are we worshiping our American leaders? How much are we worshiping America? It's just something that I think is problematic.
We did a story on this like about 6 months ago and asked people for their suggestions, and we were flooded with suggestions. So this is obviously something many Mormons are talking about with the hymns. Suggestions to add Amazing Grace or to add more global kind of hymns. But you also talk about how those hymns are sung in meetings. What would you like to see there?
I would love some tempo. I would love some praise. I would love to see us adopt some more kind of global Christian hymns that are a little bit more praiseworthy. I had a woman get up in testimony meeting in my previous ward, and she was talking all about how wonderful the church was and what a change it had made in her life, and it was this most beautiful, gorgeous, you know, declaration of what the gospel means to her, and she ended with, but we have got to do something about this music because y'all's hymns sound like we're at a funeral every damn time. And I think she's got something to it, and part of it is that we have, you know, organ players and piano players who are volunteers. They're not trained. And I've tried to play those hymns before. It's hard to play them at a proper tempo. But I think just having a little bit more joy in our bodies and a little bit more joy in our voices as we're singing, because we're supposed to be praising and worshiping. And I think having a balance of a more reverent hymnal with also some added joy and praise would be really wonderful. And it would wake us up.
What about missionary work? You had a number of suggestions for missionaries. Fewer quotas, more, again, on the women's issue, better security measures for female missionaries. What were your issues there? What are your suggestions?
I, broadly speaking, would love to see more service-based missionaries, with a side of proselyting rather than proselyting-based missionaries with a side of service. I am curious to see, with President Uchtdorf being newly assigned as the head of the missionary department, to see if that changes at all, if there's less of a focus on numbers and baptisms. I've known several people, several women who have served missions who have been sexually assaulted. Also women who have contracted mosquito-borne illnesses because they had to wear skirts and couldn't wear pants. And I know that has changed in some ways in some places, but still, if you are going to church, you still need to wear a skirt, I believe, all the time.
That's true.
And so I just think there are ways that we can change both how we perceive missionary service to be something more like, by our works, people will know us, to see us serving in the community, which is a couple of other theses that I had on my list. Just doing more community interfaith service work, being more involved. We have such a force with our missionaries. We have so many people out there. We could be such a force for good and service. And I think that testifies of our gospel as much or more than sitting down with people and going through the lessons. And I'm not saying we need to get rid of those, but I'm saying by doing the service, I think that will be a natural result.
You talk about also calls home. I guess right now Mormon missionaries, I guess the rules say they can call home, what, on Christmas and Mother's Day? But you would like to see that loosened.
Yeah, I would. I think especially with kids going out, most of them have never lived away from home, with them going out at 18 for the boys and 19 with the girls. I think it's quite the disruption in your life to go from being at home to go to a mission where you have zero contact with your family. And I just think I don't see the harm in letting people talk to their parents every so often. Obviously, you know, having them constantly on the phone would be an issue, but I just think that's a little rigid. And I think that we would probably be able to improve the mental health outcomes, especially with a lot of missionaries with anxiety and depression, if they were able to touch base with the people who have been the support system so far in their lives.
I was going to ask about, you say at one point that Mormons need to stop worshiping the family. What did you mean by that?
I mean that I feel like we talk a lot about defending the family and the proclamation on the family, and sometimes that's coded to be an issue about same-sex marriage and LGBTQ individuals. I think that when you go through the words of Christ, there's not a whole lot said about the family. In fact, kind of the only thing he talks about is leaving your family to follow Christ. And so I really think that, again, there's a little bit of idolatry coming out of this focus on the family and the nuclear family, especially when families today vary in size and shape, how many parents are in the home, blended families, same-sex parents, all sorts of things. And I really think that we have gone off the path a little bit, in my opinion.
We've actually written about another subject that kind of touches on family before, and that is family members or other loved ones being excluded from temple marriages or what Mormons might call sealings. You know, it's sort of the irony many see as a new family is, quote, being formed, and they start off by excluding members of the current family. What do you think should happen there?
I would love to see our sealing practices shift in several ways, but especially I don't see any problem with having family members who aren't of our faith or who aren't temple worthy for whatever reason be able to witness the sealing ceremony. I also think that it would give us an opportunity to show a sort of, to kind of buoy up the concept of continuing revelation, to kind of seek answers about these things and change and grow. I feel like so often there's a sense to me, I'm in my mid-30s, that the church has been kind of retrenching in a lot of things and kind of digging in their heels, and not always when it necessarily makes sense or is aligned with the scriptures. And I don't think that's necessarily intentional or malicious. I just think that this is kind of how it's always been done. And so I think it's worth examining kind of the false traditions of our fathers and examining the traditions to see if they are false traditions or whether they are theologically necessary. And so I would love to see those opened up. And another thing with families is to rescind the policy that came out in November 2015 about excommunicating same-sex couples who are married and also prohibiting the baptism of their children until they're 18. I think rescinding that would be an amazing opportunity to kind of model institutional repentance, to own it, apologize for it, remove it. I mean, I'm not going to hold my breath on that, but I do think that our theology demands both personal and institutional repentance that Christ called all to repent, not just individuals. So that would be one of my more radical suggestions or asks.
So you had one, lots of intriguing suggestions. One that stood out to me, have a Gospel Essentials 2.0 Sunday School class discuss basic tenets of the gospel, but in a much deeper philosophical, theological way. Are we talking AP gospel or something? I mean, do you think ward members would be put off by that? Or do you think that would reach some members who do not feel challenged or inspired by typical Sunday school lessons?
I think it would be really great, especially for people who have maybe read the church essays and have questions about them, or who are having any type of crisis of faith. We actually had a blog post published by Caroline Klein at the beginning of January, where her ward actually did implement this. Their bishopric decided to have a Sunday school gospel doctrine 2.0, and they are going through the gospel principles manual, but with the people who either want to discuss things more in depth, people who have questions or concerns, but it's basically a safe place where you can kind of share those experiences and minister to one another in that way. And at least according to her, it's been a really rousing success, and it's been a place for people to grow and people to connect and bond. And I actually think it would be really wonderful, especially for those who have questions, concerns, might be on the brink of leaving the church and want to discuss things one way or the other, I think it would actually be a really valuable addition.
You also have some suggestions for young adults, how they seem to be treated in the LDS Church. Tell us about this.
I think we tend to treat our young single adults, specifically like 18 to however young, as not fully formed adults, as, you know, a lot of times they require supervision for their activities by like a married bishopric member. We don't allow single members to be bishops or to have certain leadership capacities. And I think that does a disservice to them and also to us. I've heard arguments both ways in terms of whether having single adult wards is better than having them integrated with family wards. But I do think that we're a very family-focused church. And I think we need to understand that our young single adults are still adults, and they still have valuable input. They could be valuable leaders. They could be valuable role models. And that they're not deficient or broken because they just aren't married. And I think there's a huge question about, you know, why aren't millennials getting married? Why aren't, you know? And I think fundamentally there's an issue with posing that as though that's a problem. I think that there's probably a lot of reasons why they're not getting married, but I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with being not married. And I think that we are alienating and marginalizing our single members unnecessarily, and that we are losing valuable insight and additions to our communities.
The new leadership in its news conference seemed to stress marriage even more. What did you think when they talked about that?
Yeah, I saw that, and I just don't think that marriage is necessarily the answer. I think the question that was posed was about millennials specifically, and, you know, and Elder Oaks, if I recall correctly, was the one who answered, you know, it's great for them to get married. That keeps them bound to the church. And I do think that's true because, again, you're going to feel more like you're part of the community if you're kind of following the script that has been laid out as ideal. But I also think that it's worth examining kind of how we can incorporate single adults into our leadership structures and into our wards in a way, and also kind of model our cultural discourse in a way so that we're talking about how gospel principles can apply to us as individuals and not just as married couples. Because even if we have people who have been married, we have widows, we have divorcees, we have plenty of people who, for whatever reason at the time, are not married. And so I think we need to kind of work on making, you know, kind of teach the principles and let people govern themselves, as Joseph Smith was reported to have said, to teach the broader principles of charity, of kindness, of repentance, and then let people apply those to their lives without have to necessarily laying out how they're supposed to implement that by getting married and doing this and doing that and kind of checking off the boxes, again, for that script.
So have you gotten did you send your list to any church leaders? Did you get any feedback? What kind of feedback have you got?
I didn't. You know, if I had fleshed it out in more of a evidence-based way, I mean, I know we've had April has done several posts on our blog where she has really excellent policy suggestions, policy proposals that she has actually talked to church leadership about. Mine was just, it really started out as just kind of a list. In fact, I joked in the introduction to the blog post that it might have been less in line with Martin Luther and more in the spirit of the airing of grievances in Festivus, which is a Seinfeld reference. Because it was just kind of meant to be like, here's a list of things that I would like to change. And, you know, I stand by them, but I didn't feel like they were, I don't know, footnoted well enough to send to somebody. I think I would have to flesh them out a little bit better.
You didn't get called in by your bishop or anything?
I didn't. No, I mean, there's always time. But, no, I actually, most of the feedback I've gotten has been very positive. I mean, it's got almost 100 comments on the post. Most people were very complimentary. I mean, predictably, there's always going to be a few people who tell me to go find another church. But actually, I was surprised at how positive the feedback was, both on the blog, but also from friends and family members who are much, you know, much more conservative or traditional in how they see the church, and most of them were very positive. Even if they didn't agree with all of it, I felt like the reception was pretty warm.
There was one that we really cheered, which was really scrubbing, deacons really, I mean, priests really scrubbing their hands before the sacrament.
Another one of those hygiene
issues.
Yeah,
that would be really.
That was pretty much 100% agreement with that.
I have an 11-year-old son, and I see how well he washes his hands before he does things, and it's a work in progress, but I feel like just for all of our sake, especially for people with compromised immune systems for whatever reason, it would be really nice if we just took a little bit of attention to detail to the scrubbing before we're touching people's sacrament bread.
You had some thoughts about some really Mormon cultural things sort of been ingrained now. So tell us what you think about beards and the no beards kind of policy in place in for some Mormon positions.
Plus, I loved your statement about ties,
and
too.
And ties, neckties, both those, yeah.
Yes, I just think neckties are uncomfortable. They're a lot like pantyhose to me. They're uncomfortable. They don't necessarily make any sense. I don't understand why it's a cultural thing that we have to wear them. Beards, I just look at the pictures of our prophets for the first however many years, and all of them have these glorious beards. And I think that in the 60s and 70s, they kind of got associated with certain cultural elements that the church didn't want to be associated with, for better or worse. But that's not the case anymore. And I just think, I just don't see the problem with beards. And it's one of those things that I know I've had men in my life who have struggled with that, who have been called into bishoprics or are called into positions, and they've been asked to shave their beards. And it seems like it shouldn't be that important for them to shave it, but it also shouldn't be that important that it's a thing that would stop you from serving in certain capacities in the church. And so I just think, you know, again, a broader principle of keep yourself up well, you know, practice good hygiene. What that looks like to you is up to you.
You have a couple of we've touched on some of these heavier lifts we could call to try to see if changes would be made. One of them was you have some thoughts about the word of wisdom, and particularly when it comes to coffee. What are your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. I think that having the word of wisdom, I think it's actually a really wonderful thing to have. I also think that often people are not given temple recommendations because they have a cup of coffee every morning or every so often, or an occasional glass of wine. And I just think that if we aren't expecting perfection in every aspect of our life, which we're not. I mean, one of the things I actually really love about the temple is that you go in and make these covenants that are really ambitious and aspirational, and you make them before you're fully ready to do it. And that's the whole point of being able to repent and kind of attempt, you know, try to keep your covenants. There's not an expectation that you'll be perfect before you enter the temple, but there is an expectation of complete abstinence from coffee, beer, you know, those types of things. And I know some people for health reasons have to have caffeine for migraines or whatever it is. And I just think, again, it's a good principle to avoid addiction, to avoid, you know, substances that are going to negatively affect your health, to get enough rest, to exercise. I mean, there's a lot in there besides the coffee and the beer. But just kind of loosening it up, you know, you have a cup of coffee every so often. I just don't think, I don't know. On the ladder of sins, I just think of it as being pretty minor. And maybe I'm wrong to think of it that way, but that's how I feel.
What about, it's kind of a cultural thing, too, around the world, coffee and tea, for instance. That can be a big hurdle for some. Do you kind of feel the same way, although you didn't talk much about tea?
Yes, I do. And I think, I mean, it's funny, my dad served his mission in Argentina, and so he took up the practice of drinking yerba mate, which is an herbal tea, but it also definitely has a caffeine-like stimulant in it, which was fine at the time when he served his mission. And, you know, several members in Argentina still drink it. Tea is a huge thing in Japan, and I have heard about lists being handed down by mission presidents of which teas are acceptable and which teas aren't. And so there's just a ton of gray area that I think sometimes gets policed by whatever your bishop or stake president thinks, rather than it being a personal assessment of, am I keeping the word of wisdom? Am I, you know, keeping the spirit of this law in how I live my life? And I think the same thing about tattoos, too, because in, you know, some Pacifica cultures, getting a tattoo is a very meaningful thing to do with your family and with the people that you love. And so I also think, you know, we're encouraged not to get tattoos, but I also think that it's not always culturally sensitive or relevant around the world. And as we continue to be an increasingly global church, these are kind of the issues that we're going to need to confront.
Along that line and sort of winding up here, several of your suggestions, handful more, really point to a kind of idolization of leaders and looking away from Jesus Christ. And perhaps these word of wisdom things fall in that category where we kind of take our eyes off, the Mormons take their eyes off the prize, which is the focus should be on Jesus. And what do you think about that?
I think it's human nature for that to happen. I think that that is a pattern that you see throughout the Bible and the Book of Mormon as well, is that you have, you know, you're trying to make this structure to worship Christ, and I think it's only human that we kind of get boggled down in the details, or we start looking at things that might not be directly related to Christ. And I know I'm guilty of it too, and I certainly don't envy the church leadership trying to run this massive institution in a way that brings people to Christ but also isn't complete chaos. But I do think it's something worth being introspective about, and I do think, you know, I would hope that in the meetings where they're making these policies, both on like the very highest levels of the church, but also just in, you know, the correlation department, the missionary department, you know, all these different things that are part of kind of the institution of the church, I would hope that before they put these together, they would ask, you know, is this based in the doctrine of Christ? Is this based in service? Is this based in, you know, Christ's teachings of worshiping God? And I think we can always do better. And really, this list, it really sounds like a whiny list, but it's done out of love for the church. It's done out of love for my church members, the people in my church community, both specifically here in Michigan, but also worldwide. I really think that there are lots of things, little things that we can make little tweaks to that would make the church more loving, more embracing, and just a little bit more that, like Zion, where we, you know, our hearts are knit together in love with one another. And so I think there's some quote about the most patriotic thing you can do is, you know, question your country. I'm really butchering that quote. But I also think, you know, like one of the most loving things I can do and part of sustaining my leaders is to be really thoughtful about how we do things and offer my input when I can.
So your list of 95 is down to 94 now. Do you have much hope under President Nelson to be able to check off a bunch more on your list?
I mean, I do. I think President Nelson is, he seems to be really excited about the future of the church. He seems to be really optimistic. That's something I really value. I am curious to see how his rhetoric changes or shifts as with the prophetic mantle, if it does at all. You know, he's only been doing it for a little while, and so I'm going to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt and continue kind of sustaining him with my prayers and my local leaders. But I am optimistic. I am hopeful that I know that he will do what he thinks is best. I am hopeful that those things will be rooted in the teachings of Christ, and I, you know, continue to pray for him.
Well, we'll be watching to see if there's any more paired from that list. And Liz, thank you so much for your list and your thoughts and your comments.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been really fun.
Great. And Peggy, we look forward to your continuing coverage at sltrip.com, and we'll catch you next time on Mormon Land. Thanks.